kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid, where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Jordan. How are you doing this evening? What beautiful weather, isn't it? I guess all you Mouthful listeners took my advice from last week and went out and washed your car, gave away your umbrella, and I went one step further. I watered my garden. And there you go. Not only did I water my garden just a little bit so the lettuce would be nice, I didn't put the hose away. That's always pretty good rain dance. So, yeah, I think it's really great, and it's going to continue on into tomorrow. You can just hear, you can, I think if you listen really carefully, you can just hear the earth going, just like you do after you've had a great drink of water. It's really a nice feeling. And a nice feeling as well is to be in the studio with Paula Downing. Paula Downing has been taking care of the Sebastopol Farmers Market and the Santa Rosa Farmers Markets for probably more years now than I even want to know. How long has it been, Paula?
Sebastopol since 1992, and Santa Rosa, 5 years.
You've been at Sebastopol since 92?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't even say time flies.
Well, you want to know a little bit about the history of what happened?
I want to know, I want to know all about the history. But first, okay. I want to know, you do the Santa Rosa markets that are on Wednesday and Friday, I mean, Wednesday and Saturday, year-round, right. Rain or shine.
Right, yeah. We get out the margaritas when it's raining really hard, but we're there, we're there.
And then Sebastopol is the beginning of April to the end of November.
Right, right. First Sunday in April through the last Sunday in November.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I do want to know history. Tell me.
Well, I used to sell geraniums at the farmer's market. I came here from Oregon. I was working in a law office, and I needed something. So I bought this little geranium business, and it used to be in the parking lot where we are now, but it was a dirt parking lot. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And a good day was a $50 day. There weren't very many people there. And then at the end of one season, it all just stopped. The market manager moved to somewhere, and the board of directors moved somewhere else. And so we had a meeting at my house of the 10 or 12 vendors who were there, and we decided to go on, and that's how I kind of got to be the boss over there, was as a result of the disintegration of the people who were running the market before that.
Oh, okay.
And at that same time, Raleigh bought Sonoma West Times and News, mm-hmm. and he came to us and he said, you want to write for the newspaper? So that we started writing, and somehow that helped create the community the creation of the community that it is now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I give him a lot of credit for that. Yeah.
Writing about what's going on at the market, what will go on at the market.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Yeah. So that was in 92.
Yeah.
And then you took over Santa Rosa 5 years ago?
About five, yeah. I think I'm going into my sixth
year. Now, who was it before? It was
Vicky.
That's right, Vicky.
Right, before me and before her, Linda Cornelius.
That's right, Linda. Where is Linda now?
She's actually not doing very well with her health.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. We wish Linda.
Wish her
very well. She was on Mouthful several times when Mouthful first started. She used to drive in. This is when we were on during the day on Thursdays. She would come in on Thursdays and give her farmer's market report.
Oh, yeah.
It was really great. So what's going on right now at the Santa Rosa Farmers Markets?
What's going on right now? Well, you know, it's kind of wonderful. It's very heartening for me because it's the winter and weather's been pretty good. I'll have to admit that. But people are coming there to shop. I've been noticing more and more people who do their shopping at the farmers market. It's not just a something they do just out of for fun. They come to
right.
shop.
Yeah. So there's I think that's addressing sort of the two sides of a farmers market. One is to shop and actually get the produce right. and other things. The other is the social element.
Oh yeah.
And the social element's really big.
It is. It really is. It's such a respite from how hard we push in our lives. People come, they'll sit down, they'll eat something, they'll see somebody they know, or maybe somebody they haven't seen in a long time. And it's very wonderful and warm to have that human contact while you're grocery shopping. It's not a common experience.
Yeah. And I noticed this at certain markets, and I'm wondering if it's also true in Santa Rosa. If you sit at a market, if you stay for the duration of a market, and I've done that, you know me.
Yeah.
I come early and I stay late. And I do that at almost any market I go to. And I really started thinking about it a lot out at Point Reyes. And Point Reyes has a very sweet, small, very local market. Mm-hmm. And boy, right at, I think it's 8:30 when that market starts, there are the locals. They know what they are looking for, and they are shopping, and they are going through, and they are serious shoppers. But you watch, it comes in waves and waves. There's a second wave of locals that are taking a little more time and visiting, and they have coffee. And then much later in the day, you start to see the tourists come. But if you sit there, you just see waves of intent. And is it like that in Santa Rosa?
I think so. I think that there's waves of energy, and they're mysterious, too. Some weeks, you know, at 10 o'clock, it'll just be packed. And then you wonder why they're all there at 10 o'clock, but somehow they all are. I don't have any explanation for that. And then some weeks they come, there'll be periods like that. You know, they'll come later or come earlier. And I don't know. It's kind of a mysterious happening. And I don't know whether they're locals or tourists, or I can't identify that. But
yeah.
Yes, it's a definite
and how
definite
do the two,
rhythm.
How do the two markets, what are the differences between the Wednesdays and the Saturday markets?
Wednesday's a lot smaller.
Smaller both in vendors and in customers?
In customers, yeah. On Wednesday, we've made that a lot, our senior market and our school kids market. We give away senior dollars. We give away $2 to seniors every Wednesday, and they can spend it with anybody in the market. So it's become, over time, a really strong senior market. People really appreciate that opportunity to get good food and save a couple dollars. And then the schools, many of the local elementary schools, and especially in the good weather, they'll walk to the market. And so we have, you know, and then we give the kids each a dollar to spend, and then they get fruit and vegetables. And we're going to step that up a little bit. We're going to work with Kiwanis Springs School and do a unit of educational stuff. We're going to go there, plant some food with the kids, plant some trees. They have a really big sort of vacant lot, plant some trees, talk about carbon and all that with them. Ami Lyons from a Full Circle Baking Company, who is a teacher and scientific type, he's going to do that, just to try to get more involved with the local schools, because if the kids start eating at the market, then, you know, we're good for a while.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, kids love farmers markets. I mean, I think they love them partly because they can find friends and play all day.
Yeah.
But I know my little Lucas. Oh. He go into the Sebastopol Farmers Market is one of his favorite things to do.
It's so much fun watching him. He's such a natural leader. I mean, he is in the middle of all that's going on.
Sort of frightening,
the
isn't
market.
It? You're listening to Mouthful. My guest this evening is Paula Downing of the Santa Rosa and Sebastopol Certified Farmers Market. When we come back, let's talk about what certified actually means and how that governs the farmers markets.
Good point.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. Selling up, who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong. And in the fields of Pendle Valley,
Solid Arrow, Local Color, our friends Sam Page and Allegra Broughton. And it's a very happy thing that it was Mouthful that inspired that song, Local Color, off of their CD of the same name. And really talking about the kind of guests we have here on Mouthful, and a lot of them endangered, and we don't want them to go away. So we're going to real quickly, Paula, define what does it mean to be certified? I can tell you what I think it means, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Go ahead. Tell me what you think it means.
There are state guidelines that have been established for the operation of farmers markets, and to be a certified farmers market, you have to follow those established guidelines. Is that it?
Right.
Cool. No,
that's it. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go. We defined it.
That's different from certified organic.
certified organic is way.
That's another whole other world. Yeah.
And you know, maybe we should talk about Luigi. And talking about Luigi will lead us right into this whole distinction of certified organic and whatever. So, do you want to say who Luigi is?
Luigi is the rabbit that belongs to Steve Garner.
Steve Garner, the first guest on Mouthful ever.
Really?
And I try to have him back every year on the anniversary show. Absolutely.
And he does Garden Talk and Good Food Hour every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 is Garden Talk, and 11 till noon is
Good Food Hour. Yes,
yeah.
And he's been doing it. It's the longest running food and wine show in, I think, California, maybe possibly in the West.
Maybe.
It's like 27 years. It's a long time.
Yeah. And he's always interesting, always fun, isn't he?
He's the greatest guy. And he and his wonderful wife, Nanette, they do not have cats.
No.
They do not have dogs. Since I've known them, they have had two pets. The now departed Snickers, a little rabbit, and Luigi, also, and I think they were both lops. I think they're lops.
I think so too.
Yeah. So Luigi has a preference for certain things at the farmer's market. You tell the story, Paula.
Well, Steve comes to the market every Wednesday and gets broccoli and carrots for Luigi because Luigi will not eat broccoli and carrots that are purchased at the grocery store. And sometimes Steve will get in a bind and have to buy those things at the grocery store, and Luigi will take a little bite and walk away from him. I think that is really a great story. I love that.
And I think it tells you a lot about, I mean, we know, or if we don't know, that animals are wise in ways that humans aren't, we should know it, because they are.
Yeah.
Cats won't eat things that are going to make them sick and make them fat if they are allowed to be themselves. And the same is true with, animals. Animals are wise. They know what's going on with their bodies. So I find that really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen a movie where farmers in the Midwest say that their animals don't like to eat genetically engineered corn. They will eat it because if they have nothing else, but they don't like it. So I think that's pretty interesting, too.
So what is happening at the market now with the whole issue of, I mean, for a while it was like, well, I'm only going to buy organic. Now organic, because of certification, is muddled. There's sustainable. There's biodynamic that a lot of people are talking about now. What's up?
Right. Well, it's been, I can't remember when the federal government got involved with certifying, but it's probably been eight or 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
Is it that long? I can't remember. It's not very long. It's less than 10 years.
Yeah, it's less than 10.
So that immediately, of course, everyone, all the farmers are rebels, they're rebels and they're quirky and they're interesting. And so immediately, as soon as the federal government got involved, people said, well, I'm not doing that.
Exactly,
so several people stopped certifying. Several, like Laguna Farms, Scott said, I'm not going to do that. And so that whole raised the question, well, what are you going to tell people? How are we going to present ourselves if we're not going to present ourselves as certified organic? And so sometimes you just have to talk to the farmer and ask them. And they're not allowed to say organic if they are not certified.
Right. Can they say, is it legal to say we're beyond organic?
I think that you can say beyond organic. I don't think there's any laws about that yet. But so a lot of people certify just because it makes it simple. You don't have to explain to everybody. You can just say, look at my sign, I'm certified organic. Mm-hmm. And I have a third party that certifies me. And that tells you that you can be rest assured that I'm organic. The problem with that is that the big companies, Walmart and all those big grocery stores are now doing organic food. And so they have companies like Horizon Milk, which is certified organic, but they do everything they can to not really play by the rules or to make the rules.
The rules have been, well, for one thing, the rules for certification now are diluted.
Right.
And diluted. Organic does not have, one of the things, I think a really good example, and even though this isn't really part of the farmer's market, but I always thought that the way Clover talked about it, what they require of the dairies, and, you know, a lot of people don't realize that Clover Stornada isn't actually a dairy. They process milk, and they get milk from over 300 small dairy farms in Marin and Sonoma County. And to join their organic program, you have to go through, first of all, the 3 years that allows your land after using conventional practices. But then every year, you have to do more for your animals and more for your farm to take you way beyond. You have to constantly improve conditions for your workers, conditions for your animals, conditions that support the sustainability of your land. And so that idea that you're constantly doing things to make the whole ecosystem that you're getting your milk from sustainable. And that's what the big, like, Horizon and the big, huge, I mean, you can farm as horribly, almost as horribly organically as you can conventionally if that's your goal.
If you want to cheat, right.
Yeah.
If you, one thing I know about Clover that always makes me very respectful of them is that they went out when RBST came into the world.
That's the growth hormone that makes cows.
No.
Yeah, they said no way.
Yeah, and they actually got sued, and didn't cave in. Then they fought the battle and got the right to not use it if they didn't want to.
Yeah.
Which I have immense respect for that because that was a long time.
That was a long time ago, and they, you know, I was teaching Cook's Tour of Sonoma, and I think 1992, and Dan Benedetti came, and he said, "We will not ever use bovine growth hormone in our milk." And now, if anyone's been paying attention, the entire dairy industry in this country is in collapse. The price of milk is plummeting. Absolutely. It's like down to 15 or less for, I think, 100 pounds of milk. And that is something like 50% or 60% of what it costs to produce it.
To produce it.
So there's going to be more disappearing dairy farms. One of the things that happens with bovine growth hormone is the body weight of a cow, the nutrients that a cow eats goes into increasing milk production. The cows get very, very skinny, but they put out tons of milk. And so what happens is you have a glut of milk, and the price of milk comes down. And so now there's this glut of milk, prices have dropped, and there's more than people can use. It's insane.
It is insane.
Really and truly insane.
Yeah. Well, I would say that, you know, I tell my kids, you're better off to buy non-organic Clover milk than to buy organic milk by Horizon. Because
absolutely,
you can trust the Benedettis. I mean, they put their neck on the line.
Not just that. They do third-party certification, independent third-party certification from Oregon Tithe. And Clover milk is, and this is not advertising, Clover milk is the cleanest milk in the United States.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And that has been certified over and over and over again. First of all, California has higher standards for milk.
Right.
And Clover certifies, and there's all kinds of things that has to do with, you know, parts per million of various things.
Yeah.
Clover milk, the milk of the North Bay, is the cleanest milk in America. And so, Horizon, Clover organic, if you can go that route. But even if you can't, regular Clover milk is
wonderful.
Just great.
Which, you know, that whole question of certified organic, it just brings it round and round to that again. I'm not sure, you know, how over the long run that problem will get resolved, or if it'll get resolved, or if you'll just have to be able to look your farmer in the face and say, what do you do? What are your growing practices? You know, tell me why I should trust your food as being clean and good. You know,
and
it might
really
always be that.
And if you have the luxury of doing that, take it. I mean, we're here.
Yeah.
And we have the opportunity to do that. Get to know, the best thing you can do is to get to know your farmer.
We are in paradise for that, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Mean, except if we were living in Italy, maybe, but, you know.
There are little pockets around the world, but this is absolutely one of them. Now, as the market manager, what is I mean, you set up, you make sure, you collect the booth fee, that sort of thing. But what is your responsibility when it comes to monitoring the farmers and the regulations of what a farmer can sell?
Well, I watch, and the Department of Agriculture asks you to tell them if you think that people aren't being on the up and up. So, you know, everyone has a signature, the way they grow their product. I mean, if you put people's products on the table, I've looked at them long enough so that I could probably tell you who grew what.
Yeah, if you've been shopping long enough, you can do that.
Yeah. So when, and it really is an extremely rare occurrence at the Sonoma County farmers markets, but when I think someone is not doing something right, the Ag Department wants me to tell them because they want to be the investigators.
Oh, okay.
So that's what I do. Uh-huh. I tell them.
Now, I was down in Marin County Farmers Market. I did the story on Marin.
Yeah.
And the guy, the only thing he had on his table were red bell peppers.
In December or something?
January. And it said that he said they were from Petaluma.
Uh-huh.
Now, I felt bad. I mean, here's this guy. He's there. He didn't have that many people in his booth. But it's like, is there a microclimate in Petaluma I don't know about? Because, like, I can't imagine how you got peppers ripe in Petaluma in January. Yeah. That was just weird.
No.
And they all kind of looked the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's the kind of thing you do. You get an eye for it.
Yeah.
And so then, and there's, all market managers are supposed to do that, you know, report to the Department of Agriculture. But it depends how driven you are by by finances. I mean, Marin is a huge bureaucracy.
Market. Oh,
bureaucracy. Yeah. Uh-huh. They have lots of employees. They have medical insurance. They got to feed that.
And they run seven markets.
Yeah.
And they're not all in Marin.
Right. Right. So that's why sometimes I have the luxury of not looking the other way. Mm-hmm. I do. We're small enough.
Uh-huh.
We're grassroots enough. I don't have to look the other way. If I see something I don't like, I can say something about it.
Uh-huh. And can you tell the farmer? Do you ever confront the farmer?
I do. I will say, you know, are you kidding? Where are you getting this yours?
And will they cop to it?
It's funny. Actually, I've been wrong. And been embarrassed to be proven wrong. But I've also had people say, okay, Paula, I'll take it off the table. You know?
Yeah.
So anyway. So that's why you have to be able to look them in the eye. And you can, which is, you know, a great, great privilege that we have to be able to do that. The whole industry, though, I mean, even conventional farmers are talking. I was talking to the Walkers this summer, and they said, you know, it's getting so much cheaper to do organic that we might as well, just because pesticides, especially when the whole spike in the gas and all that.
Pesticides are made with petroleum products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You spend a fortune, people who are farming that way. And it just, you keep needing more and more and more. And you also keep needing different and different because, you know, immunity.
Yeah.
So that's a huge expense.
Yeah. So I thought that, you know, I think that's an interesting development, that people might as well be organic, or even if they don't want to certify. I mean, certifying costs money, there's a lot of paperwork.
Is the paperwork and the cost.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of people don't want to do that, but people are moving toward non-pesticide at this point, and not just not just here, but everywhere.
Everywhere, it's a big movement.
Yeah.
And I was reading something. Oh, in Yes Magazine, which is an interesting publication.
It is.
What was it, in 1990, there were 50 CSA programs in the United States, and in 2008, there were 2,100. You know, so there is this move. And like Jacques Pepin always says, you know, think about what it was like to walk into an American grocery store in the 60s, where if you were lucky, there were two types of lettuce.
Uh-huh.
And now the diversity that we find, even in places where there's not much going on, you still find a diversity that was not there two generations ago.
Yeah.
You are listening to Mouthful. My guest this evening, Paula Downing of the Santa Rosa and Sebastopol Farmers Markets.
All right, one final time. Support for Mouthful on KRCB comes from our members and from the Barn Diva Restaurant Lounge and Dining Gardens in Healdsburg, committed to a sustainable and locally sourced menu, fine foods and drinks, brunch on Sunday or special events for 200. Barn Diva reservations and menu online at barndiva.com.
It's raining in my heart. The weatherman is a clear today. He doesn't know you've gone away, but it's raining. It's raining in my heart. Well,
It is Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. Thanks for sticking with us. Okay, Paula, what were we going to talk about?
Do we say enough about conventional and organic food? Did we?
You know,
did we
could
give people enough information about that?
The only thing we didn't talk about is why it's important going into your body. That might be something that we could spend weeks. We could spend several shows, but let's just sum it up for now to say there is so much evidence that there are actually more nutrients in organic food, nutrients that are more readily available. And it is insane to think that if you dump a bunch of pesticides into soil where there are roots, and these roots are soaking up everything in the soil and using that to build what you're going to eat, it's insane to think that it knows how to exclude the stuff you don't want. Mm-hmm. It's just common sense. Mm-hmm. And, it's so upside down that we call farming with pesticides conventional, because it's only been conventional since really World War II.
Oh, yeah. That's true, huh?
Yeah. And I think, between oil prices, the whole issue of peak oil, economics, that sort of thing, I think downsizing in a lot of ways is good, and downsizing the way we grow food is good. Mm-hmm. Feed your soil. I'm going to be starting a worm box.
Oh, you are?
I have the box.
Worms are fun.
I'm so excited. I'm not starting it yet because I did some reading. And if we had a freeze, I don't have heat lamps and stuff. Uh-huh. So I'm going to wait until March, but I have the box. Mm-hmm. And, there you go. You've got the worms are eating up your compost. They're giving you that black gold. Mm-hmm. You put that onto, your raised beds, or I happen to have raised beds. Mm-hmm. You grow some of your own food, and that's it. It's this really great system. You don't need all these other inputs that help keep the petroleum industry, making record profits.
Making us slaves to them. Actually, it keeps us enslaved to them. Yes. It's great to grow just a little bit. I'm telling everyone, just get a little bit of lettuce, a little bit of spinach, maybe some radishes, just a salad bowl in your backyard, a little small space.
You don't even have to have a backyard. You can have, Italian parsley on my porch. There's all different kinds of things you can do just in little containers.
Yeah.
Grow herbs.
Yeah.
You don't want to go and pay, $3.75 for when you need a teaspoon of thyme. You just go out and you pick a few thyme leaves. And I'm growing lettuce. I've started trying to grow lettuce ever since Sister's Farm.
Oh.
there's nothing as good as Sister's Farm. And there was one farm that was at the Sebastopol Farmers Market. And now they're done, and somebody's moving back to Tennessee. You probably know these two young guys. One of them's moving back to Tennessee. I think the other one's going to Oregon.
Oh, right. Soul Food Farm.
Soul Food Farm.
Yes,
they had really good lettuce.
The boys were great, yeah.
And is anyone taking over Soul Food?
I don't know. They were trying to sell it, and I haven't gotten any calls from anybody yet.
Their lettuce was,
it was good.
But I can't find lettuce that I like.
Uh-huh.
So I've been growing my own lettuce. It doesn't do well when it's really, really hot.
Yeah.
But I've had lettuce right out my back door all winter, and there's just nothing like that.
It's fast, too. I mean, you put it in now, and a month from now, you're eating out of there.
Absolutely.
I like
that. Even in this weather.
Yeah.
And you can plant, if you plant some every 3 to 4 weeks,
you can have lettuce.
Yeah.
It makes you feel kind of like a big girl or something when you can go pick your own lettuce that you grow.
Yeah, and I'll
tell
you,
proud.
Very proud. Very proud. When I grew my first spinach, it was just an absolute, euphoric peak experience. I dreamed about it. You know, I have been underground. I've been underground watching my potatoes grow. And I'll tell you, I have a black thumb. I'm not a great gardener.
Uh-huh, me either.
I can make a few things grow, though. Uh-huh. I don't try tomatoes. I'm lousy with tomatoes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
But
there's always so many, and so I feel, okay, I'll just get them from the farmers.
Hey, I had
they know what they're doing.
I had five tomato plants, and I think I got three tomatoes off my five plants. So I give my money to the farmers.
Yes, let them give it to us.
You know, yeah, growing a little bit. And one of the things that I think is really good news, we're hearing so much bad news about the economy. And let me take this opportunity to remind you, it is President Barack Obama's 21st day in office. You know, 21st day. Uh-huh. He's still trying to remember where the closets are. So let's give him a chance.
Let's grace. He gets grace from me.
Yeah.
He just does.
Yes.
You know, I don't agree with everything he's going to do, but I don't care. You got grace from me.
Yeah.
You know?
he's a smart guy who does a good job thinking.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's so much bad news, but there's also good news. Certain businesses are up. One of them, seed companies and seed catalogs.
I've heard that.
Yes,
yeah.
They are booming.
It's
their
banner,
business has been like rising, and not just since, things really fell apart in September, but I think I've had record years, like 3 years in a row, increasing 30% or something for the last 3 years.
Uh-huh.
So the fact that people are looking, you know, to
their
own their backyard
own
and to grow some food,
it's
really a great idea, and it won't hurt the farmer's market.
No. I'm not even, that doesn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
I want to say, you know, Nancy from Middleton Gardens?
Yes.
You can maybe make a career. She grew Victory Garden food. That's how she started farming.
Really?
As a young person. They had
growing
a victory garden
in
her family. Yeah, she was from Chicago when they had a Victory Garden. And now, and she just kept growing. So it's a process. You have to learn stuff. If you're going to grow food, you really, it's not for dummies, really. It's not so easy to do. You have to really kind of teach yourself gardening. It doesn't come like, you know, so naturally. At least it doesn't to me.
But it's not, at the same time, it's not hard.
It's not hard. It's true.
Especially if you start out with a little bit.
Little
if you're
bit.
Intimidated,
yeah.
You can start out with herbs.
Yeah.
You know, you start out with herbs, and there's so much information on the internet now
that's true.
You're really intimidated, you know, Google how to grow herbs,
yeah.
And there are sites that will tell you. There's sites that will tell you for where you are.
Uh-huh.
There's some common sense involved. You have to deal with gophers, especially if you're in Sonoma. Certainly if you're in West County, you have to deal with gophers, which is why most of what I grow is in a raised bed.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then you can just put wire underneath, and they can't get in.
Yeah.
Into the bed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, except for the little grappling hooks I think they have. But, you know, you learn to protect. You also think, critters are going to take a certain amount of things.
Right.
But that's part of the joy of where we live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get bummed out that people are afraid of mountain lions. You know, we've got a lot of deer. There's culling the deer herds. There's food, there's more mountain lions, animals.
Mm-hmm.
When there's food that is available, animals have more offspring.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this whole system that works.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've got a lot of critters at my house.
Yeah. Skunks. I've
skunks,
got a few of those right
skunks,
now.
Raccoons, opossums. Mm-hmm. Saw little, cute little, they're cute, but they're really obnoxious. Squirrel, gray squirrel.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think I watch too many cartoons because they're really, really not as sweet as I thought they were. They seem a little vicious. But it's great. It's great to be surrounded by wildlife. But back to the markets. One of the things we haven't touched on yet. Crafts, vendors. Two things. So we have lots of produce.
Right.
We have prepared foods.
Right.
And we have crafts vendors.
Right.
Talk about the mix and how that makes the market work.
Well, you know, there are people who would prefer that we be pure and only have vegetables and only have meats and no prepared food and none of that. And I tend to go a little bit the other way and think let's have a little diversity and let's have something of this and that and just make the shopping experience fun for everybody. So there's some crafts. Both markets have some crafts. In both cases, we have agreements with in Sebastopol, it's with the city, and in Santa Rosa, it's an agreement with the vets building that we will keep our crafts to some we'll limit the crafts. It won't become a crafts market.
Mm-hmm.
Sebastopol, that had a lot to do with the city being concerned about, you know, the neighboring...
Taking business away
right,
from neighbors.
Yeah. So we keep, you know, half a dozen crafts except for a couple of special occasions. So you can come and, you know, there was a new apron vendor at Santa Rosa this week. She was fabulous. Her aprons were fabulous.
Now, are the crafts vendors local?
Most of them. Mm-hmm. You know, she happened to come from the East Bay, but most of them are from locally. So there's, you know, in Santa Rosa, you can see Karen Emery every week with her hand-dyed wools, and she spins them and dyes them and yarns, and so you can get some of that. Vicky has clothing. Vicky Kemp has clothing.
Yeah, and she makes everything.
And she makes every single thing. And then I had somebody last week who made hats, and she comes occasionally. So I try to mix it up. There's a woman who does hand-turned bowls, Kate Elvin, who does beautiful, beautiful work. I have a couple of potters who come. I have Gandalf's chocolate, but he's not a craft. I mean, maybe he's a craft.
That's food. You can eat it.
So I try to have a little bit of, there's a couple of candle makers, just so that you can, if you want something that's well made and handmade and has some kind of sentimental value, emotional value, because it's made by a human being.
Yeah,
You can come to the market.
And plus, some of those things, spinning, you know, wool mm-hmm. is a product of any region that has sheep mm-hmm. and lamb,
mm-hmm.
and so wool is a local product.
Mm-hmm.
So the art that comes from processing, spinning, mm-hmm. creating with wool,
mm-hmm.
that's local. The candle makers are wonderful. Beeswax, I mean, talk about petroleum products.
Mm-hmm.
If you like to burn a lot of candles, and I love candles,
mm-hmm.
if you're burning paraffin candles, you're breathing a petroleum product.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you're burning scented, you know, paraffin candles, God knows what you're breathing. But the beeswax candles, Lucas was got 2.5 or 3, and he smelled a beeswax candle. And he just looked at me and he said, honey.
Oh, wow.
He can tell that the beeswax
wow.
candles smell like honey.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So there's, you know, the point at which, you know, a farm product ceases to be a farm product
mm-hmm.
is a ways down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything wrong, and it's just if it's out of balance. I don't want to go to a farmer's market where there's 9 craft vendors and mm-hmm. one person with produce.
Mm-hmm.
You
right.
know, I like more right. of a mix because then I'm going to have to go to a grocery store too, and I like
right.
to avoid that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think it's a good mix,
yeah.
and I also like the idea as prepared foods, especially prepared foods that you eat on the spot.
Uh-huh.
That expands the whole social element.
Mm-hmm. It really does.
And you've gotten what's her name? Is it Kashaya?
Kashaya.
Let's say, is she
the
at the market
lady.
Now?
She's not here now. I don't know where she goes in the winter, but she doesn't stay here. She
too
goes
bad.
Somewhere else.
She is making
some good.
The best pizza I've had this side of Italy.
Good, huh?
She's built a brick oven,
yeah.
And she tows it around on a truck.
Yeah, actually, there's the man who built that is named Peter DeJong, and he's building them. So if you want a brick oven, I have his phone number.
I'd love one.
He'll build them stationary. He'll build them on the, you know,
where's he live?
Move it around. I think Petaluma.
Oh, I should get him on the show. I've been wanting to do that kind of show.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're good. It's a really good little, you've looked at it. It's a nice little
It's
oven.
It's a nice oven.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
the pizzas are fabulous. There's
uh-huh.
a couple down in Marin
yes.
that are, it might be, I wonder if it's his, there's somebody from Petaluma doing wood-burning pizzas. And
uh-huh.
I think there's
yeah.
two people down there.
Right,
But
right.
that market is huge.
A husband and wife, yeah.
That market is enormous.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it really is. So, yeah, you can get pizza. You can get Mateo, Granados, Yucatan foods, and then different ones. Have you tried Lata's Indian food?
Yes.
Yes, Lata's really fun.
Yes.
Her Indian food. She's actually one of Steve's personal favorites. Uh-huh.
She has the mango lassi, right?
Yes, she
That's
does.
Lucas's favorite, the mango
oh,
lassi.
Really? And then in Santa Rosa, we have oysters. Nellie does oysters, and she does fish tacos, and people love that. Love the oysters for breakfast. I don't know why, but they do.
So. There's tamale. There's a good pork tamale that you can get salsa verde with. I love that.
Yeah, you love that.
I'm a real salsa verde. You know, salsa verde is my favorite thing just about.
On Wednesday, I have a new, he actually is in Petaluma. He's a new Middle Eastern fellow. And his stuff on Wednesday is really good. He's got about 10 different kinds of hummus and pita bread. And it's his mother and his sister who cook. he's got them chained to the kitchen. They're from Tunisia. So it's a slightly different flavored hummus than, I don't know if you go across the water, I guess. I'm not sure. But anyway, his stuff is really good. Mm-hmm. It was small batches, so it has that fresh quality.
Fresh, that's nice.
Yeah. Then you can take that home, you know. So there's a lot of different things to eat. A lot of different experiences.
Mm-hmm. And then in addition to the produce that we've been talking about so much, you also have, you've got Santi sausages, with
yes.
Franco there.
Yes.
Really good handmade sausages.
Yes.
And Black Sheep Farms meat.
Yes.
And I know for a while in the fall, you had Santa Rosa Junior College.
Right.
And what's up with that? Let's talk a little bit about that. It was Shone Farm, and it was their meat.
Right. And they only raised a limited amount. They're learning and developing. I'm assuming that they'll be back this year with more.
Mm-hmm.
But they just raised a limited amount.
Yeah, Shone Farm is doing amazing amount.
It's
of
a
stuff.
Great resource for young people.
What about the connection between restaurant chefs and the farmers market? I know that John Franchetti at Rosso comes to the both. Wednesday and Saturday,
he's
there.
Great. He comes and loads up his car and takes it back to the restaurant.
Yeah.
I know. That's the great thing about Rosso is I know where all the food comes from or most of it. There's an organization called Fork and Shovel, which Jill from Barn Diva, who's one of your sponsors, is starting, and other people are working with her. And it's to connect local farmers with restaurants. On not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday, we're having another meeting so that with all the farmers and the restaurants who are interested, and there are probably 30 restaurants in the county who are interested, and it'll be based on a website so that the farmers will put what they have on the website, the restaurant owners can go look and see what there is and then order it, and then the distribution, I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out, distribution. So that you'll be able to, people who eat in Sonoma County will be able to go to probably somewhere around 30 restaurants in the county who are buying local food.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty exciting to me. I mean, there are already some.
Yeah, there are already some who do it.
Buying local food.
Absolutely.
But this will hopefully make it more reasonable.
Way.
Yeah, more possible and more doable for them to shop locally, because it's so much easier to just pick up the phone and call the distributor. And this way, hopefully, we'll make it easy for restaurants to do that. And right now, restaurants, I mean, it's the discretionary money. If you don't have to go eat out, so hopefully people will. We're going to put an ad in the Press Democrat and do some other advertising. Mm-hmm. So hopefully people will support the restaurants that are buying local food.
Yeah.
when you do go out.
Yeah, and restaurants are doing things.
Yeah,
I know we had Todd from Martini House over, and they've now opened up. Staff meal from 5 until 6:30 because they always cook a meal for their staff. And so first come, first serve, anyone can join in, and the prices are between
great.
$8 and $12.
Oh, that's great.
And you can have it there or to go. And then I just got something, I haven't even read the full email yet. Chloe's up in North Santa Rosa is going to start doing family table. I'm not sure if it's every Friday night or one Friday night a month. And I'm noticing I'm all for community dinners. I want day a week. I want where I just go. I sit down. I don't know who I'm sitting with. I either see friends or I make friends. And somebody puts food down in front of me. And I leave some money when I go.
It's so great.
I think that just solidifies community in such a great way.
Yeah. I've been to a couple of those places when I went to Italy the last time, and you just go and sit at these long tables, and there's people from all over the world, and you end up feeling so happy when you leave.
Yeah, those kinds of experiences make you happy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Are there other, back to the chefs, are there more chefs that are getting food from you? Have you noticed them lately, or are they just
overwhelmed? There are quite a few chefs that come to the market.
I know Mark Maliki is coming
a
lot.
Yes. Bruce from Park Avenue Catering is there. And there are chefs whose names I don't know, but there are more than just those few who are coming, more than John and Mark.
So there is that element of presence.
Yeah.
Because when I was in Berlin, I saw Daniel Patterson. Remember Daniel from Babette's?
No.
Oh, Daniel was the star chef. They opened Babette's, I think, Valentine's Day 1994. And it was a revelation. He's one of those people who has perfect pitch, absolute perfect pitch. And they closed in the late 90s, went to San Francisco and opened up Elizabeth Daniel. And then he and Elizabeth got a divorce. Elizabeth Daniel closed. And he now has his own place. It's very small, something like 8 tables plus a little lunch. It's gone back to really what, I mean, Babette's had 7 or 8 tables, maybe 9. So Qua is the name of the restaurant. And he's got a little lounge as well, Qua. But he got 4 stars from Michael Bauer in the Chronicle. Oh. One of the only, you know, Michael doesn't give 4 stars very often at all.
Yeah.
They're even stingy with 3.5. But he got 4 stars. So I hadn't seen him in ages. They have a, he's remarried. They have a baby, little Julian. Julian Wolf. Julian Wolf Patterson, 3 months old, adorable. So he was there buying microgreens and a couple of other things, and I, you know, so I got to catch up with him and saw a few other chefs there at Marin. So
yeah, well, they do actually a delivery service at Marin too. They have now.
Oh, they do.
Twice a week they deliver. So they
to restaurants.
To restaurants, yeah. So that's a really great service. We're not to that point yet here in Santa Rosa, but it's a great service. I'm not sure how Fork and Shovel, that's the organization that Barn Diva is starting. I'm not sure how that's going to distribute.
Yeah, and how is it going to support itself?
Well, we got the initial money from a fundraiser, and then everyone who belongs will pay after this year. The fundraiser is paying for this year, and then next year everybody will pay a little membership, something like that.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah. What happens at the end of the market each time, each day, when there's stuff that hasn't sold?
Well, there's actually people in a couple of different communities, Healdsburg and Santa Rosa, that are now starting to come and pick it up, come and get it. I used to deliver myself, but then I got so tired and old that I quit doing that because I had to, you know, load my truck, take it to the food bank, come back.
Oh, so it goes to the food bank?
Different places, but food bank is one of the places it goes. There is some... I just know that there are people who are picking it up and taking it to different little organizations, not just the Redwood Food Bank, but other. There's quite a few organizations in the community that give people food. So that's happening, and it should happen more. We could use more of that.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. That and one of the other issues that's on my mind is the waste. We have to deal with the plastic bags. Bring your own bags to the farmer's market somehow.
You know how that's going to happen?
How?
It's going to happen when farmers get rid of the rolls of bags.
Yeah.
It's going to happen when people are inconvenienced
and they have to
go into the bathroom at Veterans Building and fold 3 paper towels together into a little bag. That when either people are charged for bags or they have to go back.
Yeah,
that's when it's going to happen.
Yeah,
and the thing is, I don't know if I'm going to grab this bag.
Okay. Oh yeah, I've seen those. Yeah,
now
I have
these
a
little
of those.
These little produce bags that were given out as thank you gifts. The problem with these now, if I go, I need like 20 of these for everything that I buy. So the only thing you just need to have a lot of them.
Yeah,
I've actually been going to look into making them because I was thinking, well, I'm just going to make myself 20 or 30. I hate getting all those plastic bags. But really, people, they need to get rid of the plastic bags that they're giving away. Just get rid of them.
Do you remember what people did before we had plastic? I can't remember.
Brown paper.
Brown paper?
Yeah, brown paper bags.
I don't remember at all.
Yeah, it was brown paper bags.
So we can at least go back to brown paper.
Yeah, we could go back to brown paper bags. They're easier to recycle. People could recycle their bags.
Yeah.
But I mean, people who have plastic bags at home, remember to bring them to the market. But I really think you ought to consider telling farmers, don't supply bags anymore.
Don't supply the bags. I have actually given that thought.
There'll be a bit of pain.
Right?
Sure, there'll be some pain.
Right.
But, you know, the pain will go away fairly quickly.
Yeah.
You just have to shift that responsibility. And I do it. It's like, oh, I didn't bring bags. And I take them.
Yeah.
And if I remember, okay, this is the week when there aren't going to be any more plastic bags. You know, I will rise to that occasion.
Yeah.
You know, it might mean people bring their own little, some people will probably go buy little boxes of plastic bags. But you just shift the responsibility to the consumer rather than the farmer, and that would diminish it.
Yeah, I agree.
Don't get mad at me, anyone. I'd be a total coward too. But maybe you can get someone to make these for you, Paula, and get the logo on them, and you can start selling these at the farmer's market.
Yeah. It's definitely under discussion. We have to put some energy into creating an alternative to plastic bags. Because you know what somebody told me? That when they recycle, if they look in the recycle bucket and there's stuff in there that doesn't belong there, they throw it all in the trash.
Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Yes.
I was horrified to hear that.
Yes. And there's a lot of problems with the plastic bags and the harm they do to wildlife.
Right.
I mean, it's not everything. And plus, now China was one of our biggest customers for recycling, especially recycling paper. We would ship all the paper that gets recycled to China, and they would manufacture all the packages for the toys and things they sold us. Now they're not taking any of it because the economy is down and they're not selling so much. So the whole recycling system, worldwide recycling system, is falling, is collapsing as well. So we need to find some alternatives. And when, I mean, there's also corn bags, you know, the bags that disintegrate.
Right. They're controversial. I've heard opinions that they're not such a good choice.
Okay, yeah, and I don't know that much about them. And on that note, see how fast an hour goes when you're talking on Mouthful? Thanks so much for sticking with us. We've been talking about the Santa Rosa and Sebastopol farmers markets, as well as all kinds of things connected to the markets. And that means really life and all that goes with it. Have a great week. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, when we will be talking about the upcoming celebration of the Year of the Ox in Santa Rosa.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.